Oi. Okay, let's call this meeting to order. Is there any community participation out there? Please raise your hand if you'd like to speak.
I do.
Can you state your name and who you?
My name is Denise Hardy. I'm a resident of Otis and a past member of the Otis School Committee and the Farmington River School Committee. I had a comment about the minutes, which I've read, and I think it's a good point to make that they should be brief and they should not include all the personal and assumed meaning that's in many of them. There are certain areas, for example, in September, you had a meeting with the MASC representative about the open meeting laws.
Yes.
Repeatedly in those minutes, it's referred to as the open law meeting, which could lead someone to think you don't know what it's talking about as a committee. And so I think when they're that long, it's hard to read everything for meaning and would recommend that you review that. And I'd be happy to share some of my experience.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Okay, hearing none, let's continue on. approval of the minutes number 408 and 409. I need a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion.
I need a second.
I'll second that.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Teresa, can you roll call, please?
Okay. Deb Vogel?
I approve the minutes.
Roger Kohler?
Yes.
Arlene Talapko?
Yes.
Carl Nett?
Yes.
Carol Lombardo?
Yes.
Jennifer Hibbins?
Yes.
Okay, then it's majority or unanimously passed.
Okay. Tom, can we have your...
get Jess.
Excuse me?
She didn't get Jess.
Oh, Jess.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jess. Jess.
Yes, I...
And now okay. It's unanimously passed.
Okay, very good. Okay, Principal Superintendent updates, Tom.
All right, thank you. Good to see everybody. Couple of things to cover, just to let you know, as you know, we had our first snow day, actually, was that half day of school before the holiday break. When Derek Poirier from Otis tells me the roads are terrible, you have to believe him because he's always telling me they're great and no issues. So that did extend our day by one, or our year by one day. There's some fact stuff here quick. Current enrollment's 117. We have 114 in-person. Three kids are remote due to medical waivers. As far as COVID goes, I'm sure that's burning in some people's minds. We have two kids who are currently out who have tested positive over the break. And one student was a close contact that we're awaiting test results on from the parents. So not too bad so far, but I'm cautiously optimistic. None of these kids were in the building at all. This all happened over vacation. As you may be aware or not, the state decided to provide rapid tests for all staff members, which started out as a great idea. And basically consumed my Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this past week. Their manufacturer fell through, so then I had to pick them up on Saturday. I did come to school on Sunday to make them available to any staff that wanted to come in and grab them. Otherwise, I placed them in their mailboxes for them to do. This was an optional test. Also, the state the Wednesday of vacation week, I was tied up with that, picking up some N95 masks. The state kind of jumped the gun and said they were going to provide N95 masks for all teachers in every district for the remainder of the year. The problem is they sent me about 22 days worth. So I'm working on that right now. But we distributed those to folks who wanted them this morning. And we'll keep on doing it. And I'm out. We've already reached out to Desi for where's the rest of them. We have kind of held off on the restarting of the after-school programs just to kind of see how things go here. With kids coming back a year ago, there was a spike after Thanksgiving, then a big spike after Christmas, and 2 weeks later, things seemed to settle down last year. So we figured, let's get the kids in the building for educational purposes. The extracurricular stuff can hold off for 2 weeks. So that will start tentatively in a week, but I might kick it out another week just to be safe. I'm waiting to see what happens this week. I do have some attendance letters going out for parents of kids who have had some excessive absenteeism, non-COVID related. So we have a few of those because I'm concerned, again, one of the ways the school is graded is on attendance. So we're going to be looking at those this week as well. And I think that's about all I have. The COVID test, nobody. Yeah, that is all I have for you.
Okay, any questions for Tom?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I have a question,
Jennifer.
For Tom. This is Jennifer.
Yeah.
I turned off my video because I lost my connection before. I have an unstable internet connection, so I'm sorry that I you can't see me. But I had a question about mask wearing. A couple weeks ago, I was volunteering in the PTA holiday shop, and I noticed many students not wearing their mask properly with it dipped below their nose, which from my understanding is really not effective. And I'm wondering if it's possible to do some re-education. I mean, I know they're kids. I know it's hard to get them to wear it at all. Just a suggestion that they could all use a little bit of training on proper mask usage. And then the other question I had for Tom was if you have any more information on the bus that caught fire in late December. I know that was a Dufour bus, and yeah. If you have any information from them about the maintenance of their buses.
Okay. We can always ask teachers to just briefly demonstrate for kids, again, the proper way to wear their masks. It is tough with the little ones. The older kids should be able to do it. As far as the bus didn't catch fire. The bus was smoking. One reason I was given was that they assumed, because the bus immediately was towed and then over to their Home Depot, that sounds kind of weird, their main depot to be where they service everything. And all they can surmise was there's no oil leaks, there's nothing of that nature, was that the driver was actually riding the brakes on the bus. Because the brakes were newly replaced on the bus, and I guess the pads were worn down excessively in just a few short days. So they're assuming the driver was riding the brake on the bus. So as far as their maintenance goes, I'm sure they're state inspected, so I'm sure they're doing their proper maintenance. I can't give you details on that. I'm more than happy to get Terry Giardino at the next meeting, and she can give you a more in-depth look into what they do for maintenance.
Tom?
Yeah.
Is it credible to you that new brake pads could wear down like that in 2 days, even if they were riding the brakes?
Potentially. I'm not sure if it was just 2 days. It was a substitute driver who was in there. So I don't know. I can't answer your question.
Yeah.
But I do think pursuant pursuant to the conversation we had last time about safety issues, I do think we need a rigorous root cause analysis from Do For Her. Like, what really happened, and what are they going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, I'm more than happy to get Terry on at the next meeting, and she can address that with you. I know from what I was told, they assumed the driver was riding the brakes for an extended period of time, which then heated up the rotors, and things were smoking like crazy from under the front. So, but there was no fire that was reported.
Who's Terry, Tom? I don't know who Terry, you're talking about.
Giardino, she's the she's the manager for the substation for Dufour out of Lenoxdale. She does all our busing. She does us. She does Lee. She does Lenox and Great Barrington. Okay. Some of Great Barrington.
Okay, is there any other questions for Tom? Okay, then let's move on. Next thing is the financial update and discussion on the FY23 budget expenditures only. I'll turn it over to Eric.
Hi. Okay, so before we get into the budget, I want to bring something up to the school committee to get an opinion on something, because this will actually have an effect on the budget for next year and then going forward. So every year we need to have our an OPEB audit done. OPEB standing for other post-employment benefits. This liability is has to be audited every year and assigned to us. It is, again, just post-employee benefits. So all of our retirees, and it does take into consideration our current retirees and the effect that would have on us over the long term. So this audit, enter contracts for this. We are currently in year three of a four-year contract. Prior to my being at the school, there was a buying group that we were associated with that we were having this done through. And that group dissolved shortly before I started. And the company reached out to me, and then I contracted with them for the following 4 years. But now I was approached by one of the other schools in the area, Berkshire Hills, about joining their group to be part of their contract. So the only complication to that is that their cycle runs differently than ours. So next year, which is our year four, is their year one. So if we were to participate with them in that contract, next fiscal year, we would actually have to pay for two audits. The benefit to doing this is the savings that being part of their contract would bring us. To give you the context for that, so years one and three of these OPEB audits are full audits. They're much more intense, much more expensive. And then years two and four, it's just a small review based on the large audit they did the year prior. So currently, we pay $9,500 for year one and three, and $3,500 for year two and four. The estimated cost, if we were to be part of this buying group, years one and three would be $3,000, and years two and four would be $1,400. So what that would mean is, in years one and three, we would be able to save $6,500 each of those years. In years two and four, we'd be able to save $2,100, for a total savings of $17,200 over the 4 years of that contract. But keeping in mind, that would cost us an additional $3,000 next year to be part of that buying group. So before I move forward with that, and before we get into the budget, I just want to get an idea of, is that something that the school committee supports, so that I should then go forward in assuming this is what we're going to do?
Any comments, please?
I mean, as far as the numbers go, it sounds like a good idea. I mean, I know we're going to be paying double next year, but in the long run, over the next 4 years. That sounds great.
And not just the next 4 years, but then again, every year after that, we would still be part of that buying group. So there'd be savings in all of the years following as well.
I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Go forward with that.
Initial investment, but in the long run, we're going to save a lot of money.
I agree.
Okay, wonderful. Eric, so,
Eric, this is in addition to the other audit that we have budgeted in the school committee line item, correct?
So both audits are so we contract with Melanson Heath, who does our financial audit and our end of year report audit. And then this company does the OPEB audit. And all of these are budgeted in that same budget line for the audit.
Okay, question for you. Is there a buying group that we could join related to the financial audit? Because that audit seems very pricey to me. You know, when I compare it to what Sandusfield pays for town audit with about the same budget, it's a lot more expensive. So is there a buying group that we could potentially join relative to those audits that would save us money?
Not that I'm aware of, but I can certainly look into it.
Okay. I mean, it'd be great if we could find one that would save us money because, you know, it's a significant chunk of change we pay for that financial audit.
It is. Yes. Yep. I will look into that.
So would is the FY23 predicted budget item, is that going to increase by 3,000 then?
No, I budgeted that in there because I assumed that you would make that decision. And I figured worst case scenario, I would rather decrease the budget by $3,000 than increase it.
Okay.
So it is in there already. So then what I'm going to do now is switch over to the budget. So I'm going to pull it up on my screen. I'm just trying to make sure I can find this. Give me one moment. Okay, now I want to go. So I'm assuming you can all see my screen, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wonderful. Where did you go? Yes. Okay. I promise not to continue moving that quickly. Don't want to make anybody sick. Okay.
Already isn't.
Okay. So, everyone okay? Okay. So we'll just start going through this section by section. Again, I'm not, stop me if you guys have questions because I don't want to sit here and go into more detail than you need me to, but I'm happy to go into as much depth as you want if you have specific questions. So the school committee line stays fairly similar. Again, this number here does include all of the audits that I was suggesting or that we have, including the 3,000. Administration, salaries, superintendent total. Again, there's a small increase because salaries are going up. Same thing with the business office.
According to the contract, what is the percentage of the salaries go up each year?
2%.
2%, okay.
Yes. And it's the same thing for the business office salaries. Again, the legal, we're keeping that steady. Principal's office, again, similarly going up the 2%. Technology totals, again, just adjusting to the numbers that I'm predicting for next year, for it fairly similar. Teaching totals, again, going up. The reason why it looks like there's such a significant increase here is not as much money is being offset by the school choice for this year. And we can discuss that as we get a little bit further down and looking at the school choice section as to why I'm not recommending to transfer as much money there.
Eric, can you just say a little bit about what you mean by it's impacted by school choice? I'm not understanding that.
So we offset the teacher salaries with school choice funds. So
These are funds that when you say school choice funds, you're talking about funds that come to our school from other schools because kids choice into our school.
Yeah. So when kids school choice into our school, yeah, that revenue that comes in from that goes into the school choice revolving fund. Yeah. So, right. So each year we're limited in the things we are allowed to pay for with that revolving fund. But thankfully, teacher salaries is one of those, and it's really simple to use.
Okay, I understand now. Okay. Thank you.
Of course. Contracted services, special needs contracted services, it's all, again, staying fairly even. Substitute teachers, I'm increasing because we did increase what we were paying our substitutes this year. When we increased it, we were trying to keep up with the other districts close to us, and they've actually increased more than that. So we are actually still lower than our local districts. Paraprofessionals, again, adjusting for the next year in the contract. But there is, all of your faces block part of my cell, so I can't see everything as easily. See my notes. The rural schools grant, federal grant that we get, is actually down $12,000 this year. So I'm predicting it being down again next year. So that's why it's going up a little bit.
Eric.
Yep.
When you say it's going up a little bit, it's actually going up a lot relative to what we budgeted for fiscal year 22.
Yeah, but again, because there's $13,000 that we're not getting for that one grant alone, and the Title I grant is actually going down as well.
I understand that.
Let me rephrase the title. So I don't know what we're going to be getting next year for Title I or the rural schools. So, but both of those grants are down this year. So I'm predicting that we're going to be getting equal funds next year as what we're getting this year.
But you may not be right about that, right?
Right.
I might not be right. We could potentially get, I'm not imagining we're going to get less, but it's possible. But it's also possible we may get more.
Okay.
And media tech.
When do you know how much you get on that grant?
I'm sorry?
Her question was.
Oh, I'm sorry, I had a delay. I was just wondering what was the.
Eric, her question is when do you know when those figures will come in?
So the Title I grant, we find out in, I believe it's October of the fiscal year that we're actually getting the funds. So we'll find out of October of next year how much we're getting in Title I. The rural school grant, I fill out that application. I believe it's in February, and we'll usually find out right before summer starts how much I'll be getting for that grant. So it's unfortunately both of those come after the budget gets approved. Okay. Professional development, I'm keeping the same. Instructional materials, again, just bumping up a little bit here and there for just general inflation increases. Art and gym, keeping the same thing with general supplies, instructional services, staying roughly the same. As we've budgeted for this year, just again showing reflecting the increases in salaries. Instructional software, we do have much more software now. And so I'm trying to budget roughly for all the programs that we have now with slight increases on each of the prices, assuming that they're going to go up small amounts. And same thing for the nursing supplies. Again, same thing for transportation. Of course, transportation being affected by where some students are in schools.
Eric?
Yes, sir.
What The bus driver's salaries are up 20% from where they were in fiscal year 22, you know, 29 to 37. Why is that? That seems like a big jump over a year.
So it's going to be the same thing when we get down two more sections to custodial salaries to try to stay competitive and actually attract people. We needed to increase what we're paying people. On top of the fact that a year from now, minimum wage is going to be $15 an hour. It just went up to $14.25. And at that point, next January, we would have people making minimum wage who've been working for us for a while. We actually lost somebody when we were trying to fill a custodial position because of how much we were paying, even at the current rate that we're paying our nighttime custodians. So it's just the job market's getting very competitive out there. And in order to attract people, we just have to, you know, pay people a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Eric, I have a question. This is Jennifer.
Yeah, go ahead.
Are we adding back another bus? We had cut a bus last year and then that really wasn't working out. Is this factoring in adding back a bus?
So yes and no. This is factoring in for five buses, but we have five buses this year. So that bus has already been added back in, and this does keep that fifth bus working in the district, yes. And also, Carl, one other reason why the bus driver salaries did go up is I also did budget for some additional hours for one of our drivers to be able to take the vans for the additional services that they're going to need. So I didn't try to make sure that would be accounted for as well.
Thank you.
And school lunch. School lunch is getting very difficult to predict because I'm doing the same thing this year that I did last year. And as you can see here, I budget low because this is generally in the range of what we get on a normal year. This is a year where we started getting additional funds because of COVID. This right here is greatly increased because of COVID. So again, our current year, I budgeted at what we would normally be receiving. And then you can see what I'm anticipating us getting this year, significantly higher, especially in the federal, because because it's free lunch for everybody and we're getting a lot of money. I'm not comfortable assuming that same thing is we're going to be getting free lunches for all students next year. So again, I have to budget conservatively based on that. And again, the same increase this way because of the custodial salaries. I did increase the base wages for our two nighttime custodians. Heating, I'm keeping at our 14,000 gallons, but I've increased to $1.75 a gallon. It's just estimating an increase of 25 cents per gallon. Again, I don't know what's actually going to happen, but I'm just assuming with inflation, the way everything is going, for a minor increase. Our utilities are staying roughly the same. And I'm keeping electric the same because we are in a contract for our electricity. So that rate will not be going up. Mm-hmm. Keeping grounds maintenance the same. And same thing with building maintenance is staying. Oh, so I'm not putting any money in the stabilization fund because again, when we get to the end, I want to discuss capital expenses a bit. Security is staying the same. Equipment maintenance.
Eric,
yes.
I have a question here.
Sure.
Oh, this is Jennifer. I just had a question on building maintenance and if you have repair of the gym ceiling somewhere in this budget.
So that's a capital expense. So when we get through the general fund, we will be discussing that. Yes. Yes. Thank you. In equipment maintenance, I did include some extra money for some items, mainly one item that Jeff needs, our carpet cleaner, which has been in the building since the school has been open. is in great need of replacement. So I did budget for that.
Why wouldn't, Eric, why wouldn't that be a capital item?
And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was less than $10,000.
In the audits, it says less, anything greater than $5,000 if it meets requirements is to be viewed as a capital item, I believe. Okay. In the audit statements, it says
If that's the case, I'm happy to move it. That is not a problem at all.
Let's check it. I might be remembering it wrong, but I'm pretty sure it says about $5,000.
Yep. Let me make a quick note. Bear with me a moment.
It does look like the increase is $18,000, though.
I'll have to give me a second. I'll have to look into that again. I'll get back to you guys at the next meeting with a better explanation on that one. But that's under. I will email you guys with better explanation on that. I'm sorry. Okay. So the reason of the office equipment is going up is the copier that is being replaced. The maintenance agreement is going to actually be, is not embedded in the lease. It's going to be separate. So that I'm going to actually put under office maintenance as opposed to the lease, because again, it's not part of the lease price. So
and it's going to be $1,000.
For the year, yeah, it's based on the number of copies. Yes.
Wow.
But of course, if you saw how much it would cost if they come out one time, right? You might be surprised. It can get very expensive for these people to come out and work on these machines. Okay, so employee benefits again, just based on most of these are based actual payroll. And again, our FSA and then the 403B admin, and then again, the Berkshire County Retirement, which actually comes from them specifically. Then we go down to health insurance. This is one thing that also, again, might change dramatically. I reached out to our rep and she recommended using a 7.5% increase. If you keep in mind the past 2 years, our increases have been very, very small because of all the additional usage of health insurance because of COVID related expenses. They're predicting a pretty significant increase in health insurance for next year. So hopefully at some point this month, they will be releasing that increase so that once I get that number, I can actually plug that in and it will adjust the budget to be more accurate. But until that number comes in, again, this is what she recommended that I use for the moment.
But Eric, looking at these numbers, it looks like we've used 7.5% pretty much every year, and we've always come in significantly under that. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're right.
And I just wonder why we keep using the 7.5% when it's been proven over several years to be very overstated. Now, I guess this is a moot point if you're saying you'll get the accurate number and put it in before we have to vote on the budget. Yes. Then I guess this is moot because it'll be corrected to whatever it actually is going to be, correct?
Correct. Every year for the January meeting, what I do is I email our rep in the month of December and ask her for the number she recommends that I use. And so again, because I I'm not qualified to determine what that number should be. So I ask her, and then I usually find out in the month of January so that by our February meeting, it is also then the accurate number.
Yeah.
Okay. Eric.
Yes. Eric, I have a question.
Wait a second. Hold on a second. Roger had his hand up. Then Jennifer.
Thank you. I just wanted to know if there was an error in column H under health insurance offset. Should that be a positive number, or is that?
The offsets are supposed to be negative. Okay. You're talking about here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. That should be negative. I can fix that.
All right. And so that's going to change that 655, correct, Derek?
Correct. But again, that column is my, at this point, projected amount for current year. So it doesn't really affect, the 23 budget at this point.
But it does create some concern, Eric, when you're projecting that we're going to overspend the current year budget. So it's good we found this, because that'll bring us much more in line with the current year budget.
Okay.
Right. That was my question too. So it's been answered. Thank you.
Okay. So again, same thing with retiree health insurance, showing the 6.5% increase. Insurance totals, again, just showing a 5% increase. So the lease is going down a little bit because of the replacing the copier with a newer one being less expensive. And again, that $1,000 being moved up into the equipment maintenance line. Oh no. See, no, I do need to go back into that. I'm sorry. So this is where the carpet cleaner extractor is. I'm going to definitely need to understand the equipment. I'll get you a better explanation for the equipment maintenance line. But this is where the extractor is. See, this is why I remember it being less than $10,000, but I do believe it is more than $5,000. So I'm still going to look that up for you, Carl. So to make sure that we get that in the correct place.
Very good. But before we jump by 18 grand in that other line item, so you're going to come back to us with an explanation?
I'm going to come back to you with an explanation for that regardless. Yes. Yes. Let me go further down into tuitions. And again, this is based on looking at the class that's graduating out of high school, our class in sixth grade that's moving on. And just assuming, I assumed half and half going to Lee and Berkshire Hills. And then same thing with school choice, just looking at what we have for this year and trying to estimate what's going to be for next year.
Eric, I have a question on the school choice, if I may.
Sure.
For the school choice tuitions, my understanding is when our kids, this is our kids that choice out where we have to pay tuitions to other schools. My understanding is that there's some fee that we pay, some tuition we pay, and it's different depending on what school the kids are going to. It's capped at 5K, but it typically comes in at less than 5K per student. And I noticed that your estimate here uses the 5K cap times the number of students. So I'm just wondering, what have we typically averaged in terms of per student tuition payment to a school that the student choice is into?
$5,000 is the minimum that we've paid since I've been in my position. There are one or two that are actually more than that, but there's none that are less than the $5,000. And then there is the special education increments, which get put on top of that.
Okay, that, you know, I'm just going by what I read on the DESE website where they said that it's capped at 5K, but it's, you know, typically less than that. Maybe that information is out of date.
Correct. That was true when the program was started, and it was increased little by little each year and capped at 5. So now everyone's at 5,000.
Okay, understood.
And then lastly is the special needs out of district non-public tuition. And we are actually down to only a single student. And then this is the tuition cost for them for their program during the school year and their summer program, which then leaves us. And then our circuit breaker. So this, the $21,500 is the revenue we received in 21 that we use in 22. So this $16,004 is the revenue we are receiving this current year, and we are using that to offset next year. So that leaves us with a total general fund budget of $4,812,504, which is up 3.42%.
That's compared to the current fiscal year budget.
Correct? Yes, the current fiscal year approved budget. Yes.
Okay. Yes. So a question, and I emailed you on this right before the meeting. I'm sure you probably didn't see it, but for fiscal year 21 actuals, you're showing us being under budget by 139K, and yet we came up with a number of about 420K that we were under budget that went back to the towns as credit against their assessment. So I'm having trouble understanding this fiscal year 21 actual number of 4.7, because in stuff we talked about before, it was like 4.4.
Yep. So what that difference reflects is just under $288,000. And that $288,000 is actually classified as revenue, because that's the money that transfers in from the regional transportation revolving account on the assessment worksheet. So,
yeah, this is because you subtract the transportation and then you do the math and then you add the transportation back in, correct?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Okay, I understand now.
And so again, these numbers right here, the assessment numbers don't mean anything because I don't have the final enrollment numbers for this year yet. So please don't pay attention to those. I also don't have the chapter 70 number for this year, which is why you'll see it matches last year. These numbers, I'm still waiting. I'll have these numbers updated for you for the February meeting. And then before we go back to capital, I just wanted to come down here to the school choice so you could all see these numbers. And pardon me, I need to grab my notes really quickly. So you can see that we still have the $20,000 for curriculum in here, so that none of that's touching the general fund. Same thing with some library materials, Nathan's classroom, some more professional development, and some special needs contracted services as well. And then you'll see, like, this current year, we're planning on using $184,000 of that. Whereas for next year, I'm keeping this total to 138. So that only left 66,000. And the reason that is, so we're starting this current fiscal year with $491,000 in that revolving account. Our budgeted expense is $250,000, which then brings the balance of that account to $241,000. Based on our school choice revenues this year to date, I'm estimating that we're going to be getting about $97,000 into that account, which would then leave us a balance of about $338,000. So by using $138,000, it allows the school committee to maintain that account at a balance of about $200,000. So that, again, if anything happens, it's another little safety net So again, trying to make sure that there's some money in there, but not an excessive amount. Are there any questions about that? Okay.
So,
not about that, Eric, but you, go ahead, Roger.
Is that a figure that's usually in that account in the past years? 200,000?
Like, I mean, it varies. It varies. I mean, as you can see, we weren't making good use of those funds here, which is why it built up to where it's at now. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're using $250,000 in current year. And I'm trying to get that number back down so it's not an excessive amount of money.
Is there a rule on how much you can spend out of that account?
There's no, the only rules surrounding that account are what we can utilize the funds for. There's nothing saying that we have to keep a certain amount of dollars in there at a minimum or a maximum or how much we're allowed to use. I've heard of some districts that allow that account to get extraordinarily large.
And again, Eric, what is it that we can use these funds on, or maybe more importantly, what can't we use them on?
So they have to be used for items and programs that benefit all of the students. It can't be used for individual students. It has to be for all students.
Give us an example.
Well, I mean, again, like payroll, right? So we're using that for payroll in general. That helps all students. We could not use that for, say, like a van, because that's not necessarily helping every kid directly.
So, Eric, if that payroll line went up 100,000, that would lower the payroll amount in the previous portion of the budget, right?
Yes, it would.
And it would still leave ton of money, not a ton, but more than 100,000.
This is going to leave it at about, it
varies. Yeah,
what you're looking at should leave it at about $200,000. So if you take 100,000 out, right, you're cutting that in half. You're going to be left with a balance of about $100,000.
But Eric, that this is in addition to the approximately $225,000 of E&D funds we're carrying this year,
yes,
correct?
That is correct. So what I'm basing trying to hold on to monies like that on is the same as the towns with their free cash and their stabilization funds, right? So we're only allowed 5% in E&D. So I figured have another 5% roughly in school choice. So that, again, if one big instance happens, we are then not at zero. I'm just trying to be financially conservative for the district.
A big ticket would be like the furnace or something like that, right?
Yes. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, I understand the notion of these funds, but you're talking about a total of more than $400,000 in sort of rainy day funds.
Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, even if a boiler goes, it needs to be replaced. I mean, I was chief technical officer for a boiler corporation. You're not going to be spending more than $50,000 on a new boiler. So it just seems like a lot, you know, 400 is a lot of money. You know, a big event in my mind would be $200,000 event, and we would still have $200,000 left.
These numbers are simply my recommendations. Right? You guys are the ones that get to vote and decide what these numbers are. These are just my recommendations. But what I would recommend then is, should we then benchmark ourselves against our two towns? That way, it's, again, if we're trying to represent our towns, does it make sense to then see, okay, well, how much money do our towns hold on to in comparison to their total budget to see what we should be doing as the same? Okay. But again, so, I'm just making
I'll make a comment on that, Eric. It's a little bit different for the towns. For example, the towns have know of big expenses they're going to face in the future, like certainties. For example, in Sandusfield, they've got to pay for broadband internet. So they build the funds to be able to pay that bill when it comes due. We haven't had to pay it yet, but they're building. So I think it's a little bit different here because we're not talking about known future expenses that we have that we're planning and building funds to pay for like the towns do. So it might not be such a good idea to benchmark against the towns here. It might be better to benchmark against other schools, school districts.
Well, I hear you, but the only difficulty is finding out where other school districts are with their school choice funds. But
hey, Eric, I have a question for you.
Sure.
If we were to have a special needs student who needed outside placement and transportation, would that come out of those funds as well?
That could not come out of school choice. That would have to come out of E&D.
E&D, right? E&D?
Correct. Unless you circumvented it by transferring an additional, like let's say it was $100,000. You use an additional $100,000 of payroll expense. You move that down to school choice, freeing up the money in the general fund to use for that other expense.
Yeah, my only point is, you know, rainy day fund, whatever you might call it, should we get a student who needed outside placement when transportation, that could easily be $100,000 to $150,000 at a blink of an eye.
Yes.
But isn't it also true that in that case, additional circuit breaker funds would kick in?
But that would take a minimum of a year for that to get to us. Yes.
Yeah, but okay, but the addition of a let's say a special needs kid into the district, I mean, we can just have special town meetings to approve that when we need to. We're kind of looking at what if at something that may never happen. Because yeah, that student will be taken care of, but I don't think we have to hold on to this money.
Okay.
So it would be my opinion to maybe increase that payroll expense to sort of match what we did last year. That would bring the payroll budget down in the previous part of the budget for your prediction for next year. I mean, I think that's the part where we can really look at that money and use that toward payroll expenses.
Eric, am I wrong that I feel like if we've been somewhat lucky in our budget as far as unless I'm remembering wrong, I feel like our special needs budget has been much higher in past years.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
by a lot. And I don't know, between transportation and schools, I remember at one point we had three students maybe in a school that was costing maybe 60,000 plus a year.
Yes.
Much more. I remember one student was for 90,000 sent down to a school in Westfield or something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Eric, what have we considered the potential project of fixing the ceiling in the gym, which I know
that's actually the next section I wanted to talk to. I wanted to come back up here to capital expenses.
Okay.
So there's a small list of stuff.
Could I just comment on the on the school choice?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry for the delay. I just wanted to say I agree with Roger in wanting to offset more of the teacher salaries from that revolving school choice account, because I do feel like $200,000 is a lot to keep in there when it has so many restrictions. Like you're saying, we can't use it for special ed. It has to be something that benefits all the students, which the teacher salaries would. And I just feel like when we take this to the towns, it's going to be very difficult to explain this 28% increase in teacher salaries when it's not actually going to the teachers? It's not as if they're getting any more than their 2% increase.
Mm-hmm. I agree with what Jennifer just said.
And just as context, as a teacher, I'm paid out of this account in my district. So I get that line item on my paycheck. So I know there other districts are using this to pay their yep. teachers.
Yep. It's a very common use. Yes. Okay. So now to get into capital expenses.
Eric, I'm sorry to interrupt, but before you go to capital, just one more question on the general fund stuff. I just wanted to be clear. Are you or are you not projecting a budget overrun in the current fiscal year?
I have not had a chance to look at that closely. I tried to get as many of those numbers in there as accurately as possible, but I was hoping to wait till after this last warrant, but the warrant didn't go through till Thursday. And Friday was a holiday, so I haven't had a chance to actually put those numbers into the spreadsheet to get a better idea, because we've just started getting our bills for tuition from some of our other schools. And we also just had a special ed student that we're going to need to start paying for. So there's going to be pretty good adjustments I'm going to start seeing this year to be able to make better predictions on there for the February meeting.
And that error we found, that's a 200K swing, because it was, you know, plus 100 when it should have been minus 100. So
yeah,
that'll put us back under. But I think it's important to stay within the budget. And then the last question, and I promise it's the last one. You showed expenses increasing over last year's budget by about, 3.5-4%. And yet when you showed the assessments, they were going down. How does that happen, Eric? Is there some 30,000 foot explanation you can give for that?
Yeah. As I said earlier, you need to not pay attention to the assessments, because there's not accurate data leading into those numbers. This presentation was solely for expenses only.
Okay, so let me ask my question a different way. Given that you're showing the expenses, if that holds up, that 3.5%, would it be a reasonable expectation that assessments will go up 3.5% as well, or more, you know, in on that order?
No. For the reason that we do not yet know how much we're going to be getting in Chapter 70 funds from the state.
Okay.
I also do not know what the minimum local contributions are going to be for each town. And I also do not know the enrollment numbers. So I don't know what that shift is going to be. So there's three large factors that can have a very large impact on what those are.
Okay. Understood. Thank you.
Yep. Of course. Of course. Now to start talking about capital expenses. So, we have a few doors that need to, so there are some things I have, there's one item I have a solid quote on, and then there's a few items I don't yet, because I've been working on it and it's not been as easy as I would like to get these numbers specifically. So there are a few doors that need some, there are three doors that need replacing and one door that needs a little bit of work. And the quote I just received on that today was for $14,000 to take care of those four doors. We have the gym ceiling that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And we did get a quote on that back in April of 2018. And the quote at that time was $50,000. Part of that was because there was a bunch of material the person needed to buy that hopefully they shouldn't need to buy, as far as prep material being plywood for the putting on the floor of the gym to not damage it. I'm still trying to get the quote on that to have a better number. I should have that for you come February. We still also have some carpets and stair treads that need to be replaced. And all of the smoke heads in the building need to be replaced as well. And I'm trying to get quotes on that, but that'll have to be done in phases because to do that at once would just be too expensive because we did have the, our fire alarm panel replaced last year. And now the system is able to have assignable smoke heads so that if we had a fire, when the fire department got there, they would know exactly which room it was coming from, as opposed to right now, they just have an idea of which zone, as in, is it downstairs, upstairs, the gym, the cafeteria? So eventually we need to start making that switch over as well. So again, I'm working on getting these quotes. We're not going to be able to get this all done next year. I'm just trying to be open about all these things needing to be done. The doors and the gym ceiling are two items that I do not believe can wait. The carpet stairs and the smoke heads, those we can, you know, again, we've been working on the carpets and stairs since I've been here every year. Little bits have been getting done. And we just, again, that's just something that we just need to keep moving forward on.
So we didn't do all the stair treads in the last fiscal year, because I remember we talked about stair treads and paid some money for that last fiscal year.
That work was actually just done over this past holiday break. Okay. The stairs in the front hall, going up from the first floor to the second floor were replaced. And then the little stairs down from there down to the gym and then up to the first hallway and then upstairs, those same five steps from the landing up to that hallway were done. We still need to have the ramp down to the calf done, as well as there are, I believe, are four steps down to the break room. And then the recess hallway stairs going down there needs to get done. There's one other stairwell that's a fire escape stairwell that gets used very, very seldomly. And the color of those stairs then won't match. But the only time you're ever going to see it is if there's a fire alarm and there's an issue. And there's no reason to replace those because they have hardly any use.
Yeah, Eric, I would suggest the following. I would be sensitive on the capital line item because people are sensitive to the fact we spent a lot of capital money recently with the paving project and the van and other stuff we did. So I would suggest we focus on things that are safety issues, but things that are like cosmetic issues, you know, the stair tread not matching. I just think we should be very sensitive, else we're potentially going to run into problems with town votes because folks are very aware and sensitive to the fact we spent, you know, better than $250,000 in capital last year, this year, however you want to look at it based on the accounting.
I agree. And that's why I was suggesting that we really need to focus on the doors and the gym ceiling. And then the stairs, carpets, and smoke heads. I mean, I would argue that the smoke heads are definitely a safety issue, but I agree with you in the sense that it's not an immediate issue. They definitely need to be done, but the doors are a current safety issue and the gym ceiling is a current safety issue.
What I understand the safety issue is regards the gym ceiling vis-a-vis tiles falling off the ceiling and potentially striking a child. What's the safety issue with the doors, Eric?
Frames rusting away. So Jeff had to use a sledgehammer to adjust one of the doors so that it would open freely and not get stuck. And we have some other doors that are having similar issues. So those become fire hazards.
Okay, I understand.
And that's also why we're only focusing on those four doors and we're not trying to do every door in the building because if a door is working fine, great. And also the quote I got is to reuse the existing hardware on the door. except for the closer. The closers were going to replace because of this, the new doors going on. But as far as like the locks and the handles and all that stuff, that's all going to be reused because that all that stuff works fine. And it's not, it doesn't wear in the same way that the closers do.
Okay.
So are you saying that that line item should be like 64,000, the maybe with whatever it's, these quotes are?
It's going to be roughly, but again, the only reason I'm hesitating is because I want to get the actual quote for the gym ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, if it stays at that 50,000 mark, then yes, that line will be 64.
I think I would focus on the gym ceiling and the doors. If it, I think that's, that's good.
But Eric, are the treads on the stairs a hazard? I mean, some of those treads in the past, I don't know what got changed, but some of those were pretty uneven. So if those are a hazard.
And that's why we focused on the ones that we did at first.
Okay.
I would need to go back and take a closer look. Some of the carpets, I'm a little, possibly a little bit more worried, especially the carpets running down the main hallway. They're starting to fray around the boxes and the floor. And that's what I get a little bit more concerned about. But again, we can cut anything that's fraying away and it just starts looking horrendous, but not being as much of a hazard. And again, I can take a closer look at all of the stairs that are remaining again.
And Eric, then just Eric, looking.
I'm sorry. Okay. I just want a quick question. Eric, what is underneath the carpet? Is it wooden floors? Is it metal floors?
Oh, it's concrete.
Oh, it was concrete. Okay, no good. Okay.
So if we were looking like 2 or 3 years into the future, and really prioritizing the things that need to be done right away, let's say the gym ceiling and the doors, would you be saying absolutely next year would be the carpet and the tread? Is there anything else that you foresee?
Yeah,
is there anything else that you foresee like in the next 2 or 3 years?
Replacing the smoke heads. Every smoke head in the building needs to be replaced. Mm-hmm. And because of the way that our system is currently zoned, they have to be like when you do any single unit in a zone, the whole zone has to be redone because that's just the way the wiring works. So what the quote that I'm trying to get from them breaks it down by zone so that we're not trying to do every zone in the building in the same year, because that cost is just, I believe is because they're, it would be ridiculous. So that we would actually have to break out over multiple years as well. The other thing that we're going to need to start thinking about is the phone system as well, because it's, I believe it was used when we got it in the building. And there's definitely some issues with it, but again, it's doing okay right now, but it's something that we need to think about replacing at some point in the future.
Okay. And that's like the hardware, like the telephones, like in all the classrooms. Okay.
Yes. And there was a law that was passed last year, I believe, that when you update a system, that the system you put in actually has to be if you make a 911 call, it has to be identifiable from exactly in the building where it comes from, which our phones don't meet that. But again, we don't. My understanding right now is we don't have to change the system immediately because it our system's grandfathered in. But when you change a system, that's what has to be done.
Okay. And just so I'm clear, do the smoke heads have to do with the fire system?
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay. Yes. What are they? They're like the smoke detectors.
It's exactly. It's the detector. Yes.
Okay.
Just a general comment, Eric, if I may.
Sure.
I want to give you some perspective here from that I'm sure represents the perspective of the Sandusfield Select Board. So you're familiar with Proposition 2.5, right?
Yep.
And for people that aren't familiar with that, that basically limits what the town can increase property taxes from in a given year to about 2.5%. It's more complicated than that, but that's the general gist of it. So In the case of Sandusfield, where the school budget is 60% or maybe even a little higher than that of the total budget, the school budget goes up by 4%. That's all of the Proposition 2.5. And to go beyond that 2.5%, you have to have a special town meeting with a two-thirds vote to approve going past the 2.5, which ain't ever going to happen. So I just want to throw that out there as some perspective as we look at some of the conservatism that's built into the assumptions. We should really consider that, because that Proposition 2.5, to override that with a two-thirds town vote, that ain't going to happen. And so if the increase was 4% in school, the assessment to Sandusfield, that would eat up all of that 2.5%. Is it clear what I'm saying, Eric?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I understand what you're saying, but again, it's up to the school committee to decide what's in the budget. This is just what I'm presenting to you. So you guys are free to have me change whatever you guys want me to change.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. I'm just giving perspective to the school committee in terms of the way this is going to be viewed from the Sandusfield Select Board. And because the town vote has to, you know, the towns have to vote to accept the budget, right?
Yep.
Okay, very good.
So unless there are any other questions.
Eric?
So just so I'm clear, as it's coming in now, it's 3.42%.
Yep.
Above what it would be last year.
Correct.
Okay. And potentially it could be level funded. It could be exactly what it is last year if we just use that school choice money and move that into tuition. But then again, you haven't added in the $64,000 yet either.
Correct. Well,
Where the capital expenses.
Correct. And health insurance. So I will say every year since I've been here, our rep gives me a number that I use in January.
Mm-hmm.
And every year when I come back in February, it's lower.
Okay.
As Carl pointed out, the question is how much lower is it going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think we have to wait until February to get more accurate numbers before we make any kind of decisions.
Right.
Because it looks like there's a lot of things that could possibly change in the meantime.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, good.
It's a process.
Can I ask about the February meeting?
What about the February meeting?
Can I? So for tonight's meeting, the Sandusfield Select Board was not able to attend because it conflicts with their meeting at 7:00. Is it possible for us to schedule the February meeting on a different day or move it to, say, 6:00 so that they would be able to attend and participate in the discussion?
Okay, Jennifer, were you here last year? You were here last year. We always have a special meeting for the two towns for their financial people to come together. We try to accommodate both towns and come up with a time that's good for both towns. So we will do that again this year. We're not going to just say it's going to be the first. We'll have our regular school board meeting the first Monday, but then we'll have a special school board meeting to go over the budget. Mm-hmm. So that will not be on the same day we normally meet.
Carol, that special meeting, because I wasn't there last year, does that happen before or after the school committee votes on a budget?
It happens before. We won't vote on the budget until it's totally complete.
Mm-hmm.
So unless we have that meeting, there might still be changes to be made. So we will wait. The school committee will wait on the budget till it's totally complete.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
So in addition to that, Carl, and I'm not sure if this is the meeting that Carol's referring to or not. And I'm sorry, I'm just trying to find a document to pull it up to make it easy for me to see. There's also the public hearing, which is a meeting that I run. It's not from the school committee. It's a meeting that I host, I run, that anybody in the community can participate at. That happens before the school committee votes. That way, any of the feedback from the select boards, finance committees, town members that attend, can the school committee can then take all that information into account before approving.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Can we move on? Is everybody satisfied with their questions and has nothing else to say? All right. So let's move on. We need to finalize and vote to approve the district improvement plan goals. I need a motion to approve.
These are the four goals on ELA, math, enrollment, and school communication. Correct, Carol?
Correct.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I need a second.
I'll second it.
Okay, discussion, please. Anybody?
Carol, I sent you a note on this, and I'm in favor of these goals in their current form. But I would like the school committee to vote on whether we should add task time to formulate a goal for science. In other words, in voting on
Carl, these, I had a comment on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just got your email today, so I didn't have a chance to look at all the data on our science scores for the past several years. But, you know, I know it went down for last year. That's 2021. There were no tests given in 2020. But I thought in some of the years prior, science was actually like a pretty strong performer for Farmington River. And so I'm wondering if last year's score was just sort of a fluke. I know there was a very small pool of students who participated. I think it was 9 kids took the test. So I was wondering if it might make sense to see what the scores are for this coming spring, the 2022, and see if we can see a trend and then make a goal based on that. So what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so first of all, what you said about in the past we've done reasonably well in science is true, but it's also important to point out that the drop in this latest testing puts us at the bottom of the peer group, and I just think it sends a very bad message to the community if we don't set a goal for science, which is one of the 3 key pillars. And if, in fact, this year's score is a fluke, Jennifer, nobody should have any concerns about putting in a goal for next year for science. I just think, I don't know how you don't put in a goal for science, which is one of the 3 main pillars of the educational program. And in fact, if you look at where we stand amongst the peer group now, we're actually standing pretty good relative to ELA. Okay, I think we're 4th in the peer group. We've improved in math where we're about middle of the pack. And the place where we're weakest right now based on the latest test scores is science. So I would have a hard time justifying to members of the community why we didn't put a goal in place for science.
Anybody else have a comment? So let me ask a question.
I'll give you some input if you like.
Sure.
Yeah, we've had science goals in the past. Traditionally, we did fairly well. I think last year was one of those fluke years for us. I can develop a goal, but I guess the difference I see between ELA and math is I have the ability to progress monitor using nationally normed tests to monitor progress of students. With science, we don't have that luxury in the district, unless we want to buy a K-6 science program that gives me that ability. I can do it. It's not a problem. It's just I'm concerned about how do I write a goal that everything hinges upon one grade level, one test. Which is vastly different than ELA, where we're using DRA, AIMS Web, the literacy footprints, local assessments. We're using multiple assessments to monitor student progress, where I don't have that, and the teachers don't have that ability to continually monitor progress and make adjustments as we move along. That's my only concern.
Well, when we talked about this at the last meeting, Tom, and I raised this issue, the comment that came back, I don't remember whether it was you or Mike, was, well, we need to prioritize, and we're going to prioritize around math and ELA. And that says we're making a conscious decision to de-emphasize science. And I struggle with that, especially given where we're positioned weakest relative to the peer group is in science right now. I just think the optics here are horrible, guys, if we don't set a goal for science. Maybe Tom doesn't have to do anything. Maybe it was a fluke. But I think if you don't put a goal out there for science, it sends a message to people that science isn't important to us. And I don't think we want to send that message.
I don't think that we're sending a message that science isn't important. I think that having a pandemic and kids who were not in school and basing, an opinion on tests on kids who really did not get a lot of education in school for easily a year, if not more, and then having 9 kids test on that, I think that basing an opinion that maybe it's disgraceful or whatever, I think that, you know, we all want to see our science scores go up. And I personally don't believe that just because it's not in an evaluation that no one thinks it's important. I would disagree completely.
I agree with you.
Well, just in regard to your comment on, you know, time missed from school with the pandemic, it was the same for the kids in math and ELA. And we went up in math and ELA both last year, and we went way down in science. And the kids were in school for the same amount of time in each of those things. So I've made my point, but I do think the school committee should vote on this. You can vote to not put in place the goal for science, but I'd like the school committee to be on record in terms of how they vote on this matter.
Well, I don't think it's fair to say that school committee doesn't think that science is important, because I would disagree on that, especially. Well,
that's fine. But my motion is that after we vote on these first 4 goals, that we vote on whether we should task the school to put in place a goal on science.
I think maybe in the future
we'll see how the vote comes out.
Just a procedural question, and I don't know the answer. That's why I'm asking. This way we keep things, everything above board. Can the school committee vote on something that's not on the agenda?
No, we cannot.
Okay, so I mean, if you decide that that's what you want me to do, I'm more than happy to do whatever the school committee decides. I just want to make sure everything's in proper order, I guess.
Hang on a second. My suggestion would be is we go around and ask each committee person whether they want to put this added to the district improvement plan. If they do, we will not vote on it this time. We will put it on the agenda for next month and vote on it then. If they decide they don't want to put it on, then we will take the vote tonight. Is everybody in agreement to that?
Yeah.
Okay, Teresa, where are you?
She's up there.
Right here.
Okay, can you just ask each of the school committee members if they want to put the science in and wait till next month to vote on it or not?
Okay.
This kind of sounds like a vote, kind of.
I know. I was just thinking the same thing with Roger.
Kind of feels
weird.
I don't
think you can do this. I think you have to table it and then put it on the agenda next month saying we will vote on whether or not to put this on the school committee goals.
Mm-hmm. I think that sounds right.
Okay. Is everybody
so maybe we can still vote on this tonight, but vote to amend the school improvement plan to include some other items.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what Roger is saying. You can table this right now
No, he's not saying table it. He's saying
vote on you would have to. But if you vote on it, you're reopening the vote next. That's what it sounds like.
I would suggest that we put it off till next month and add that onto it and take a vote then. Is everybody in agreement to that?
I can agree with that, Carol, but I think there's an easier way. We can vote on these four goals tonight. It's just a notion that we have the right to add an improvement, a district improvement goal or a school improvement goal going forward. In other words, this doesn't have to be the end of school improvement goals. So I don't have any issue if we vote on these four goals tonight and then take up the current discussion at the next meeting.
Is there any other opinions?
Yeah, I kind of would like to vote on these four tonight.
Roger, you were part of the committee that formed this, so your opinion holds tight, and so does Jess and Jennifer. So you're saying vote for it tonight, Jennifer?
Tonight.
Yeah, I would like to vote on the four district goals that we have finalized tonight.
Okay. Teresa, can you take the roll call then?
I sure can. Okay, so we are voting
to approve the district improvement plan goals.
Right. Roger?
Yes.
Jess?
Yes.
Jennifer?
Yes.
Deb?
Yes.
Carl?
Yes, I approve these four goals.
Arlene?
Yes.
And Carol?
Yes.
Unanimous.
Okay, let's move on. We have to have a discussion on the regional agreement between Sandusfield and Otis. Have you all seen what was proposed by one of the selectmen from Sandusfield?
Yes.
I'm not sure. No. I don't know. I'm not sure I am.
No?
Nope.
Nope.
Eric, do you have that?
I have the request.
I do too, but if Eric has it, he can put it up on the screen.
Sorry, I had to remember to unmute myself. I do believe I have it. Give me one second to see if I can pull it up.
Can someone let me know what date that came in?
It was...
I want to look it up.
It's right before Christmas, I believe.
Okay.
If he can't pull it up, I have it in front of me.
I have it here. I'll tell you when it was sent out.
I'm sorry, I'm pulling it up as we speak. Just have to get back to the right spot. There we go.
Okay, each of you, can you please take a second to read it, please? Has everyone finished yet?
Yes. Carol, I have a comment.
Okay, so let's get into a discussion and see where we go here. Go ahead, Jess.
So this
Request
would indicate that we, as whoever you are voting as, what does it say, that Otis vote in unison. I guess I kind of take offense to this because I don't vote in unison. I vote for the children. I vote for the school. I vote for what I think is right. I'm pretty sure that the reason that there is that the members of the school committee are based on the population and number of students. So this would kind of make it seem like I am voting simply because I'm from Otis. And that is a little insulting to me because I vote for what I truly believe is right for the school and right for our children. So that's my comment.
I agree with that completely, Jess.
Yes.
Well, there's a counter view here which says
that. Can I make a comment?
Wait a second. One person at a time. Carl was first. Jennifer, you can come second.
The RDA specifies a quorum as being a majority with the additional provision that there be one member from each town in addition to the majority. Okay. What this amendment proposes to do is line up the voting procedure consistent with the quorum requirement. Okay, one reason it's important to do this, first of all, you know, it's my belief that to pass a motion, there should be at least one vote from each town to pass a motion if this is a two-person district. But another important reason to do it is open meeting law prohibits matters from being discussed by a quorum of the body outside of a public meeting, which means a majority plus at least one member from each town. So if we don't line up the voting consistent with the quorum requirement, and given that open meeting law prohibits a quorum, not a majority, a quorum, and in our district, a quorum is defined as majority plus one, then four Otis members could communicate on a topic because that's a majority the way we vote now, decide the matter completely outside of a public meeting. And I don't think that our regional district agreement should be constructed in such a way as to allow that and effectively circumvent open meeting law. I'm not saying that it's occurring, but it gives the impression that it could occur. And I think we should obviate that impression.
Comments, please.
I still take quite a bit of offense to that. I've been on the school committee for many, many, many years. And I think that for all of the many years that I've been on the school committee, I think that we have all worked together. I think that most people really work towards, you know, the people from Otis and Sandusfield and all the years we spent, you know, sitting in the library at Farmington River, really talking things out, you know, from just many years. I have to say I truly take offense to that because what I am doing on this committee is for the kids. Mm-hmm. And it's a little insulting to think that, you know, we're having meetings behind people's backs because that's not the case, never has been, and won't be in the future.
May I say something to Arlene here?
Wait a second. Oh, Arlene, could I just speak? Give Jennifer a chance. Okay. She was next.
Sure.
Jennifer?
Oh. So I have a little bit of a different perspective on this. I support this amendment request because I support the town of Sandusfield staying in the Farmington River School District. Mm-hmm. And I know there's some displeasure in town, you know, and some talk about withdrawing from the district. And this gives Sandusfield a tiny little more bit of a voice on the committee. We still, the Sandusfield members can't approve anything without Otis. We're not asking for another member on the committee. It's just sort of correcting this flaw in the agreement that's 30 years old and has never been amended. And the reason I see this as keeping Sandus Field within the district, which I think is in the best interest of the students in town, because we really did not find great options for, you know, other nearby schools. And the reason why I think this keeps Sandus Field in the district is they don't have a legal argument that we don't have the home rule provision. And this was a way that the town of Worthington was able to withdraw from the Gateway School District. And this was back in 2010, Gateway voted without Worthington to close the Worthington Elementary School. And they were, you know, the residents in town were very upset about this. And then they proceeded to try to withdraw from the district. They were granted, you know, they were successful in that because under the law, they didn't have home rule. So this would be giving us that home rule, and it would prevent Sandus Field from at least using that legal argument to withdraw. And like I said, that's why I'm supporting this amendment, because I would like to see Sandus Field continue to be in the Farmington River School District. I don't want our town to have to spend money on lawyers and legal fees. I would like to give that money to the teachers.
Arlene?
Okay. First of all, I'm finding a problem seeing that we're talking about two towns with a sense of vying against each other for control, it seems to me, that even though that may not be the truth. I feel that our focus is on the school, which is a combination, which is a combination of two towns' students. And that the only topics that we should be focused on are what help or you know, whatever affects the students. I'm sorry that this is going on with Sandus Field. I'm sure it's very troubling to them for all the reasons they may have. But as many years as I've been on the committee, I never saw Sandus Field having trouble or ever stating that the vote was not fair, or that Otis was in charge or in the majority or any of those things. We had differences of opinions and we voted, and nobody said, well, you know, Otis has got the majority vote. And so, again, I want to focus on, it's a building that contains two groups of students. But I don't think we should be, I don't know if the word is catering, it's not the right word, but catering to the issues that Sandus Field is being impacted by. I think that's enough.
Anyone else?
Yeah, can I just mention something? Yeah, I wasn't exactly sure what this amendment involved, but you know, I understand it now. And it basically, the way that opening paragraph started off was a little abrasive, I think, with the wording as far as Otis voting together. And I know, just being on the school committee, and we've actually passed most things with
unanimous.
With, well, maybe not always unanimously, but every time, at least with one member from the other town in it. So I really don't think that's going to change, but this just makes it more in line of what is defined as a quorum in our situation. And in the school committee, the quorum is defined as a majority of the members, with at least one member from the other town. So it just keeps it in line with that. And, you know, we could have a vote, but there's seven members here, and two members of Otis and two members of Sandus Field all vote yes on something, and two members of Otis vote no, and one member of Sandus Field votes no. that would be one way to still pass something with both towns represented. I just think that this would be more consistent with how the quorum is. Because as it stands right now, the majority, I guess it would be just four votes from anybody. And those four votes could happen to be from Otis. I haven't seen that happen since I've been here, but all this is really stating is saying, hey, anytime we pass something, let's make sure both towns are represented in it. And I think that's all that it's really saying. And Jennifer had a pretty interesting take on it. And I hear what she's saying, and I think there are people that might view this, if we don't move forward on this, they might view it as a sort of like, hey, okay, well, they're keeping Sandusfield out again. And I know you guys don't feel that way here on the committee, but like I said, we've all sort of voted together, you know, we've always had at least one member from the opposite town. Mm-hmm. This is just kind of putting that in line with what the quorum represents. So I'm actually for it.
I have a question, Carol, if I could.
Sure.
Again, I don't know what it is with me and procedures tonight, but this decision isn't made by school committee, correct? This has to be made by both select boards?
Exactly. It has to go from the school committee.
So
the recommendation has to go from the school committee to the select boards. And then the select boards vote, and then I believe it needs a town approval, but I'm not sure of that. That's why this
Carol's,
is only
Carol's a discussion. Carol's correct.
Hold on a second. Yeah. There's too many people asking questions. Let's finish. Let Tom finish first.
So I guess, again, this is the committee's decision to pass it on to select boards for their consideration, and then it kind of drops it in their lap to make that decision.
That is something I'm going to have to research.
No, it's the way the amendment works and is written in the RDA is that if the school committee approves the amendment, it then goes to town votes in the two towns, and both towns would have to approve it in order for the amendment to be put into effect. There is another method by which the agreement can be amended, which is if a town does a townspeople petition with 10% or more of the voters in the town being in favor of the amendment, then it also would go to each of the two towns for votes, and each town would have to approve it in order for the amendment to be effective. So there's two vehicles by which you can get the amendment considered by the two towns. One is the school committee approves it first, and then it goes to the two towns. The other one is a 10% petition from one town. And if that 10% petition comes through, then it also goes to the two towns for votes.
So it's not just a simple referral to each town select board for discussion?
No, it has to go to a town vote to be approved as an amendment, Tom.
But the school committee have to approve it, or they just refer it? Because since they don't have the decision to make this change, can they simply just refer it to each town select board for consideration and go from there?
Well, this did come from a select board member to us. So
yes, but that's Sandusfield. That is not Otis.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think what the school committee, if school committee refers it to Otis select board and refers it back to Sandusfield select board for their consideration, and maybe they have a discussion between the two towns at the select board level, and then they can make the determination at that point in time whether or not any given town wants to bring it to the voters.
This is what I'm going to suggest. We're going to table this, and I am going to do some research on this. I will be in touch with the town selectmen and see what the procedure is and how we go about doing it before we make any kind of decision. If that's okay with everybody, I will take that on.
Well, Carol, there are two people that are on.
Carol?
Hold on a minute. There are two people before we take any votes.
Right. We're not voting.
Okay, whatever we're doing. Jennifer and I think Terry
Gould
has been asking to speak. So before we move on, I think they should be heard.
Is everybody that I have to get an agreement from the school committee. Is everybody agreed to let them speak?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay. Terry, are you on?
Yes,
Terry Gould?
Yep.
Okay. You've heard the discussion. You're a select person. Can you give us your opinion?
Well, I can give you an opinion as somebody who's been around since the beginning of the regionalization. I think you've got a couple of other people on here that may have been around from the beginning. And I do believe that there was a formula that was used in the formation of the region, and it may have gone through the state for the makeup of the school committees. And I know that in any committee, you can't have an even number of members. So there has to be, I believe that when the formula was done, given the populations between the two towns, that the formula was done so that what you see existing exists here. I've been attending your meetings probably for a little over a year now. And as a finance board member, I attend each year during budget season. And I have never seen a split vote between the towns. I have always, always seen at least one member from each town always voting one way or the other. So I really think that this is not something that is an issue. And I know that putting it in an us and them situation is never a good idea. The right. school population has to be looked at as a united school. Right. So saying that one board or that there's more than one board here, there's not. You have just one school board here, and they represent the school population. You don't represent the town, and you shouldn't be speaking for the town as school committee members. You should be speaking for the school for as representatives for the kids. But again, I think you may need to do a regional, like a delve into your history to see how the formula went forward. It seems to me you have very good debate, but I don't think I've ever seen a vote where it's been 4-3. It's mm-hmm. never been an us and them situation in all the time that I have been attending your meetings. So I'm not even sure that this is something that you need to be worried about. And that if there's someone manufacturing that kind of propaganda in one town over another, that person needs to be brought into the fold to understand that the school committee doesn't represent the towns. They represent the school. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm coming from. But I don't think you have this kind of problem. And I think speaking for the town as school committee members is not advisable in either town. I don't think that I should speak for one town. I don't think that a member of a committee member that resides in another town should be speaking for their town. They should be speaking for the kids. Right, and I right. think you guys do a really good job taking care of your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Is there a Sandersfield select person on this call? I guess not.
They have a meeting tonight.
They're at a meeting. That's correct. That's what Jennifer said.
Okay. Well,
can I just speak to the procedure?
Sure.
So I have the regional district agreement in front of me, and on page 7, it details the procedure for any proposal for an amendment. It may be initiated by a vote of a majority of the members of the committee. So that's us, or by a petition signed by 10% of the registered voters of any one of the member towns. And it's only after one of those conditions is met that then it goes to the select board of each member town to include in the warrant for the next annual or special town meeting called for the purpose.
Mm-hmm. Which is what I said previously.
Okay, well, I think that what we will have to do is put this on next month's agenda for a vote, if everybody's in favor. And if not, the discussion will end here. So what do you say, members?
I think we should vote on it.
We can't vote on it tonight. Oh, you mean next meeting?
I'm not talking about tonight.
Next meeting. Sorry, I made a mistake.
Next meeting.
Okay, Arlene?
And I'm saying we vote on it next meeting.
Arlene?
Wait, are you?
I'm just trying to get it. I can't make a decision unless I know what all you people want me to do. I can put it on the agenda for next meeting if everybody is in agreement to that.
I'm in agreement.
School committee.
I'm not in agreement that we should put it on the agenda.
Anyone else?
I think it's worked for all of the years.
I think we should put it on the agenda.
Wait a second, one person at a time. Deb, can you say what you said again?
Sure. I think that the way we've worked, now I'm only, I haven't been on as long as most of you, but I think that it's an effective way that we've operated. We think of the kids, and the kids don't belong to Sandersfield or Otis. They are the kids for the school. That's it. That's the way we vote. And I think that this is an effective way to vote, just as we've been doing it.
Anyone else?
I feel like we're taking a vote by asking us right now.
Thank you, Roger. I was just about to say that. Carol,
I'm not asking for, if the school committee wants it on the agenda, I am perfectly happy to put it. Why don't you email me and tell me whether you want it on or not? That'll end the discussion, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, I'm going to take a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
A second?
I second it.
Okay, everybody in favor?
Mm-hmm. Here's your roll call.
Okay.
Aye.
Thank you.
Aye.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Carol?